KFIZ News Time is 9:40. Final Act today, continuing from the AirTech Heating Studios on this Wednesday, February 24th of 2021. Spencer Wagon here with you, and not often we have a guest on twice from the national scale, but we are going to do that here today. We are joined by Steve Siebold. He is author of a book called How Money Works, certified financial educator. But instead of talking about the book, we're going to talk about an issue that folks have probably been hearing about quite a bit. Seems like forever. Should college athletes be paid? And Steve says, let's start to pay those college athletes. Let's talk about that issue here with Steve. He joins us on the phone lines for a few minutes to talk about that issue here on this Wednesday edition of the show. Steve, good morning. How are you today?
Hey, good, Spencer. Thank you.
Appreciate you taking some time to chat about this. Now, you're a former college athlete, is that correct?
Yeah, I was a Division I tennis player back in the 80s.
So this is something that you probably have experienced firsthand, at least the lack of money going towards college athletes. For folks maybe who aren't in tune with the sports world, maybe they're not big college sports fans, explain this issue and kind of where we are right now in this issue, and why is now the time that we should consider starting to pay these college athletes, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I played sports, and you know this, but some people may not, that, you know, I played tennis, and tennis is not a money-making sport for any university or college, even the top ones like I played for, but or golf. It's basketball and football, of course, and it's become a multi-billion dollar industry. You know, we have March Madness coming up here in a few weeks, and, of course, you know, the football season just creates billions of dollars and all kinds of money, and the coaches can make up to $10 million a year in salary alone, not to count the other part of their incentive compensation, and the players make nothing. And the money has gotten so insane that it's time that these kids are just being ripped off. They don't know how money works. They don't understand finance. The families are usually black from poor parts of the country, and they're being ripped off. And it's just it's time to change it.
You talk about those million-dollar contracts. I think it's the USA Today that puts out the annual ranking of collegiate salaries, and you know, coaches getting paid millions upon millions of dollars. Some rightfully so. You look at the Nick Sabans of the world and some of the more successful ones. Some you might question, why are they getting that much money handed to them for being a mediocre product? But that money's there. There's TV contracts. There's merchandise sales too that all are bringing in cash to these institutions. Yet the players aren't seeing any of it.
No, not even when you put their name on their jersey and they sell it, the kids don't even get any money. And of course, again, that mostly if it were tennis and golf where they made all the money, where rich kids basically play and come up through the system to play at Division I level, those kids would all be millionaires because the families know how money works. They understand finance because they're from wealthy families. And the NCAA knows this. They know, Spencer, that these families are poor for the most part. And that's the case, overwhelmingly. And they know it. They know they're not going to fight back. And so they give the kid a diploma and they make them billions of dollars and they hand them a piece of paper with their name on it. It's just a travesty.
You talk about the jersey sales. You can go on to any major, sports site right now, and this is something that I know Jay Billis, ESPN analyst, points out all the time on his social media feed, and he has for years. You can go to Fanatics or whatever sporting goods site you go to, put in the college team, and for the Wisconsin Badgers here, you can buy a Jonathan Taylor jersey or a Graham Mertz jersey or whatever jersey you want with the player's number. And I don't think they put the names on there anymore because they think that people won't notice. But, you follow the team, you could pretty much tell who that player is, right? You don't need to have half a brain to know that that's a jersey, of your favorite athlete. But that's kind of interesting to see that that sale continue on with without any cash being handed out to the athlete for selling their jersey online, right?
Yeah, and you notice there's no one's buying the coach's jersey. Of course, they don't have jerseys, but if they did, they wouldn't be buying them. No one's the coaches are making millions of dollars, and those are just their base salaries that they actually publish. What people don't know is what goes on behind the scenes. Many times, they don't know what goes on behind the scenes where these people are making sometimes 5 and 6 times what's published. I mean, these coaches become some of the wealthiest people in the world, literally. some of these guys are worth $100 million, and the kids get zero. I don't know how these coaches sleep at night. I read Dabo Swinney from Clemson, Saban. These guys know what's going on, and they're just robbing these poor kids because they're poor kids.
There's obviously the people with the NCAA, and there are, you know, obviously a group of people out there that that are against the pay of college athletes because it will ruin that quote-unquote amateurism, and there's some folks out there that would believe that college sports will be ruined forever if the pay of college athletes or college athletes are paid. What do you say to those folks that might believe that, and why is it time for them to maybe consider the opposite viewpoint, Steve?
That's a narrative that's being pushed by the NCAA. It's been being pushed for years. The universities push it. The colleges push it because they don't want, we're talking about billions of dollars with a B. They don't want to give up the money. So they say, well, you're going to ruin the amateur experience. Well, let me tell you, the Division I athlete at one of the best schools in the country, and that's not football, that's just tennis. You don't live a normal college experience. They run you ragged. And, you know, and you get a degree and that's fine. But I mean, for what these guys, now tennis, we didn't bring in any money, so that was, I think that's a fair trade-off. But it's not like you get a normal college experience. You're training all the time. You're traveling all the time. You're talking to the press all the time. And of course, you know, basketball and football is 10 times what tennis or golf would ever be in terms of demands on the players. But they keep pushing this narrative because they don't want to give up the money.
Talking with Steve Siebold, he's the author of How Money Works. We talked with him last summer about his book. We're talking about the issue of paying college athletes here this morning. Steve, you mentioned it before briefly, tying into, and it's not just, you know, athletes that are of color, black athletes or whatever. It's all around. You hear those great stories of, hey, you know, this kid grew up, a hardworking Midwestern kid, and he gets to college and he gets the scholarship, or he's the walk-on. And those are all great stories. As a fan, you love to hear that, obviously. But what you're arguing is that, and you mentioned it before, you know, these kids are, like you said, run ragged, and they're basically given a piece of paper. There is that chance they might get to the NFL, but as we know, the overwhelming majority, don't. It's still tough to get to the NFL, no matter what school you go to or what diploma you have or what training you have in school. What should change there from a perspective of from your perspective? Should there be some changes to that process? Is it just purely stopping taking advantage of student athletes, in your view?
Well, yeah, to your point, you're absolutely right. I mean, 6% of basketball players are going to go pro, 2% of football players. So virtually none of these kids are ever going to see a dime. They've created billions of dollars, put 80,000 people in the stands. And on my point is, if you're going to make the coaches rich, look, if you're going to pay the coaches $100,000 a year, if you're going to pay Saban $100,000 a year or $200,000 a year, fine. Then give the players a diploma and let it go. But if you're going to pay them $10 million, how about you give the kids at least $100,000 you can put into a vehicle, a financial instrument, let it sit and compound with compound interest and grow with compound interest for 40 years, and they'll come out with a couple million dollars when they're 60, 65 years old. At least they'll have some retirement. That's 1% of what a guy like Saban makes, just of the published amount. So, I mean, I think it's gotten so far out of whack because there's so much money involved. And it's a bunch of people controlling that don't want to give up the control. It's really about money at the end of the day.
It's there's a lot of discussion, obviously, about equality, and I know in the interview pitch I'm seeing in front of me here, it's of course Black History Month, and you talked about the disadvantaged kids that come from a poor background. They get the scholarship to their dream school, and they might get to the NFL and change their life with that the big lump sum of money, but that chance is obviously very, very small. Where does the equality discussion come into this when it comes to the treatment of black athletes and people from disadvantaged families? What needs to change there?
Well, I think that's the only way this is possible, Spencer. If these were rich families like tennis and golf families, I mean, I grew up playing tennis, in Wisconsin. I played all over Wisconsin. I grew up in Chicago. I played all over the world, as a kid being trained to be a pro athlete. And I was not from a rich family, but I was actually in the minority. I had sponsors so I could do it, but most of the families are wealthy families. Golf is even wealthier than tennis, as you know. And if it were those families, this would be all over the news, and of course it wouldn't even be happening. But they're taking advantage of people because, I mean, if your family's on food stamps and you have a chance to get a diploma for free, you know, you're not arguing with the NCAA. You don't want them to kick you off the team, and of course they will. You know, these guys know they've got the power over these, not only the kids, but the poor families of the kids, most of whom are black in basketball and football. And it is Black History Month, and I think it's time we really, you know, bring this out in a big way in the public and expose this for what it is.
Last question, Steve. If you were the head of the NCAA, what changes do you make on day one?
Oh, you put a hierarchy. You put an incentive compensation hierarchy in place, just like you do in a major corporation. You pay the best guy on the team based on results. Let's say it's the quarterback. You pay the quarterback X amount of dollars. The third string place kicker, let's say, is the lowest guy, maybe not. But if he is, you pay him the least. You pay everybody in the middle according to their contribution to the team, just as you do any corporation in the country. It's free market economics, except they're just taking all the money. But, I mean, that's what I would do first day if I was running the NCAA. They won't do it, Spencer, because they want to hog the money. But that's what should be done, in my opinion.
Steve, your book is called How Money Works. If folks want to learn more about it, where can they go?
They can go to Amazon and purchase the book, or they can go to howmoneyworks.com.
All right, Steve, thanks so much. Good to have you on again.
Thanks, Spence. Appreciate it.
Have a great day. Steve Siebold joining us here again, the author of How Money Works.